We're living the energy transition, and we might not realize how important that is. The transition itself is walking through and towards electrification. The product Helion makes is the very engine of such electrification.
Your trusted source for information on the energy transition. This is the Insider's Guide to Energy podcast.
Martin, it's great to have you on the show and get into this discussion. For a lot of our listeners, they may not understand the depths and the nuances within solar modules. In fact, I think many people think of it as increasingly a commodity. What are people listening, missing if they're thinking about solar PV as a commodity?
The volume that is being installed makes us think that it is really massified and it is a commodity. But, you know, within commodities, there are specialty products and there are niches that require, you know, higher attention, higher efficiency, innovation. It's not different than, you know, any other product, right? You might use butter every day. But, you know, there's some butter that is different than others. And it might be organic, it might be salted, it might be, I don't know, made out of goat milk for the lactose intolerant. So any product that you use on a daily basis is at the end a commodity because you just purchased it. And it could be special or not. In solar, you know, the product we make, which is what transforms the light into electricity, has to be up there for 25, 30, 35 years. So it is a bit special. If you want the reliability and the quality of the product within it so that it lasts that long.
I guess as we talk about that, and Jeff alludes a little bit to commodity, and I get there's some differences, it would help me to maybe baseline, what does a watt of energy cost if I buy a solar panel? Or how much is it a watt? Is that how people judge solar panels generally?
Yes, it does. It all depends who's the buyer and how many you're buying, right? If you go to a Home Depot or any of those sort of box stores, to buy one for, you know, your picnic or your RV or your tent, you may pay 10 times what, you know, or more of what a company that buys tens of thousands for a large solar installation. So, you know, when we make and sell them by the tens of thousands, so, you know, in that type of volume, the price on a per watt basis, you're talking about cents. You know, less than 50 cents, in some cases less than 30 cents per watt. And a panel, you know, is over 500. So you end up paying $200 for a module, $250. But if you go and buy one, again, at a retail store, you might, you know, pay $1,000, so it's much more than that.
And so I guess the thing that's so unique and exciting talking with you today is your North American production, right? So much of the news talks about China inundating our market and bringing solar panels in and low cost. And then we have this IRA and a bunch of policy to get onshore production. So the one thing that was really intriguing when you came up on our radar to talk today was that you're producing these onshore. Help me understand what that means, because you're actually speaking to me from Canada. I think you're a Canadian company, but you're manufacturing in North America and in the U.S. Is that correct?
Yeah, we started manufacturing in Canada in 2010 and in the U.S. in 2017. You know, I've been called many names throughout my long life, but one that I like that, you know, a journalist in the U.S. Calls me is one of the originals. And the originals, because we've been around for a long time, so we are not a byproduct of the Inflation Reduction Act. We've been here before.
And so I guess you're not a byproduct, but you're manufacturing in North America. You just recently announced using U.S. cells, which is pretty interesting as well. So help me understand. I mean, I think the IRA may not be your byproduct of it, but you're certainly going to be a benefit from it.
It is, because it's helping the market grow, right? When you look at the evolution of the U.S. market in terms of demand, right, there was barely any demand at all before 2010, 2011. Started very slowly, but, you know, growing 15 to 25% year over year. Up to 2022, that growth, again, continued very healthy in the, you know, plus 20% year over year. And what we have seen since the passage of the Inflation Reduction Act, that growth actually accelerated, right? And from 2022 to 2023, that growth was much, much larger. This year is expected to grow, you know, another maybe 25%. And the numbers now are making the U.S. market the third or the fourth market within the planet in terms of size.
Talking about cost, there are incentives for domestic content, so the U.S. manufacturing makes a difference. But I'm hearing that international modules are sometimes maybe half the costs. It's a big delta on a dollar per watt basis. Does the math work? Does the domestic content adder actually make up for the cheaper international modules?
It is like buying a pair of shoes. You need to find the one that fits your foot, right? So this is no different. It will work for some, it will not for others, because it's not just the module. So to achieve domestic content and be able to claim the 10% extra investment tax credit, you need to have several things. So one is related to the cost that you were referring to. So the overall is not just the solar module, right? So the entire capital expenditure of your investment has to contain more than 40% of cost coming from products made in the US, produced in the US with the US components. That's cost. But then you have to also have all of the steel in that installation made in the US, you know, poured in the US. And you have to pay on your labor above a certain threshold that is county related. And it's called prevailing wage. So you have to pay above prevailing wage, at or above prevailing wage. You need all three. So while the cost might work, you might not have the steel. You might be paying less on your labor. So you need all three. It's not either or, it's all three. That's why for some people will work, for some people will not. So what it ends up being is a sort of a calculator where you have all of the hardware that the project requires. And if you achieve with all of it over 40%, which is the threshold that is required now, and that threshold continues to increase year over year, and it will be 55%, the requirement. That threshold will be 55% in 2026 and beyond. So you need the module to be a part of that and everything else with it.
Quick follow-up on that. In terms of the shoes that fit the foot, are the feet walking around, are more than half of them, you think, choosing the domestic content pathway? Or where's the balance
shifting? It's project specific, right? So we have basically 40, 50 clients that have been our clients for, you know, in some cases, 14 years, and in the majority, 5, 6, 7 years. And these clients will have some projects that fit and some that do not. So it is project specific because, for example, you know, projects have a certain amount of time to be built and you need to have them connected by a certain point in time. So for, you know, let's pick one thing. If you cannot find a transformer or that the transformer that you can find is going to take 18 months to show up, which is probable, the domestic transformers, then you resource to an imported transformer, and that might kill your calculation for the domestic content. And that client might be, one that 9 out of 10 installations are domestic, but the one where they miss origin transformer on time, that will not. So it is not only client specific. So is the foot is not the client, the foot is the project.
Now you're making significant investment in US plant. So you're making a bet that this game changes. Is there going to be economies of scale to even that out? Or is the domestic production going to always be there? What's the long-term bet that you're thinking? What changes in the future?
Well, we're always asked, and we've been asked every time we make an announcement, that really the announcement is we're doing this. We don't make announcements for the sake of announcements. I'm always asked, why a small-ish company out of the middle of nowhere continues to grow in a market that is so competitive when so many others have tried and died trying. And what I always say is that we're very cautious in the growth that you're referring to. We don't bite something we cannot chew, because if you bite something that is larger, you choke. So to your question, we serve a portion of the market that values what we have to offer. So we don't compete just on product price. Because if you do that, then coming back to the first question in the conversation, you're making a commodity. And that then you'll be competing face-to-face with imports just on price.
So I love the dimensions of price in solar. There's dollar per watt, but there's also LCOE, the levelized cost of electricity, which is how much you get out. You hinted at that a little bit in terms of quality. One of the other things I'm starting to hear more about is bifacial modules. What does that trend look like from your perspective? Mm-hmm. Maybe first just do a quick explanation of what bifacials are and where you see that on the trend line from the last 10 years.
So, when you look at the last 30 years in solar, right? Solar cells are a slice of crystal, very thin, 150 microns, that is chemically transformed so that that crystal, when receives light, that photon, that light that gets in, kicks an electron inside of that crystal. That electron moves and is captured on the surface by, let's call it a cable. Right, it's very thin, it's micrometric, but let's call it a cable. And it's taken out. So that's the electricity that will come out through the cable that is behind the solar module. Historically, and again, this is common sense, the light that hits the panel creates these electrons, the electrons are taken out. The light hits the front of the panel, as it would hit your face if you are outside sunbathing, same thing. So that is what historically has been what a solar cell inside a solar panel does. Around 2013-14, some companies started making solar cells that actually can capture light in the front and also on the back. And there are different cells, different technologies based on different wafers, the crystal. They're called by their type, and some can absorb more light in the back than others. But basically, if you can absorb, let's say, 100% of the light in the front, the back will be a percentage of that, 70 to 80%. Some heterojunction, which is a particular type, will be over 80%. So basically, these cells can capture light both on the front and on the back. It won't capture any light in the back if that solar module is against a roof or against a wall, because the back will be, let's call it, blind. But if you install it in a way that the module is just sitting and there's air in the front and in the back, then there will be direct exposure on the front and there will be reflection on the back. And that is an effect, it's called albedo, that actually, depending on the site, you will get, you know, from nothing to 35% extra power as being captured from the back of the module. So that is what is called bifaciality, because the cell has two faces and the module will have two faces. So this is a technology that has, I would say, been available industrially and installed around the world. Started slightly in 2018. We started manufacturing this in 2019. And now I would say 80%+ of the market, which is everything that is not on a roof, uses bifacial modules.
Wow. That is to hear that a new technology from 2018, I mean, this is 5-6 years now, and is the majority of what you're saying is the ground mount, so not roof mount, but if it's on the ground and there's grass or dirt or something reflecting up to the back of that module, that you'll get, wow. So that's the majority of, and that's like utility scale deployments you're seeing?
Anything that is ground mount nowadays is bifacial. There is no reason not to, right? And this is the speed. Again, you know, some people might be more familiar because we all have one close to our hands on what the cell phone technology has been. And again, I'm old enough to remember the first cell phones back in the early 1990s. And, you know, you had a cell phone and it was a box that looked like a car battery, right? And I remember people at the grocery stores actually having the cart just to put the phone in because it was super heavy, right? And now, I mean, the things are, you know, futuristic if you want to. So the speed at which technology changes and the speed at which we adapt and adopt technology is mind-bending. So, you know, things like this, I'm referring to the bifaciality now, not the phone, do bring advancement and bring that, you know, levelized cost of electricity that you're referring to lower and lower, to the point that in most places in the world, power generation with solar is cheaper than any other technology, particularly because the fuel is free.
So I guess we're talking about advancements. The one thing that kind of comes to my attention, if we're looking at 2030 goals or the solar plus decade or whatever the agenda that someone might have, we have a whole lot of solar to install over the next few years to get there. And every ounce of energy you can get out of a solar panel is less that you need to produce and making more likely to get there. So do you see technology evolving where we get greater percentage of what we can out of a solar panel's efficiency? And have we seen there? Are we like, yeah, are we 28% these days? Or where are we at these days with these kind of efficiencies?
So industrial volumes right now of what is called PERC, P-E-R-C, which is the type of cell, well, I was referring to types earlier, the type of cell that, you know, has been 90%+, maybe even 95% of the market in the last few years, is around 22.5%. conversion, right? I'm a metric person. I never understood and will never understand imperial measures, but a 2 square meter, which is, let's say, the size of a door that you have in your house in between your rooms, a module that was 2 square meters back in 2010 was 270 to 275 watts. A module of that size today will be 100% more. It's 540, 550 watts today. So that is the evolution that has happened in the last 13, 14 years, an increase in efficiency on a per square foot basis of 100%. That has happened. And, you know, we see right now in 2024 that the adoption of yet another type of cell. It's called N-type cell, or some might call it TOPCon, which is a development of the Fraunhofer, a German laboratory, 10 years ago. So that technology that was developed 10 years ago now is industrially available for the world to use. And that this year, we're seeing most of the manufacturers, us included, change to this technology. And that is a 7-8% gap change forward, acceleration on efficiency. So that 540 watt module in a 2 square meter that I was referring to will be a 580. So from 540 to 580 in the same space. So, and that is happening right now, right? So these things happen every 6 months, there will be a change.
And does that change your production line?
So a change for the better.
That sounds very promising, but you're just putting a production line in for 2024 or whatever. How does that evolution take place for a manufacturer for solar panels?
So some things are easier to put together than others. The TOPCon cells have more. I was referring to earlier that the cells will have this avenues, cables, micrometric lines that will capture the electrons and take them out. The PERC cell has 10 or 11 of those. The TOPCon cells has 18 of those or 16 of those. So you need to adapt. You need to change. You need to invest in your equipment so that you can use the new technology.
Speaking of new technology, and great shout out to Fraunhofer. I actually worked at Fraunhofer USA for many years, and it's great to hear stories about early stage technology that is researched and then commercialized and put into practice. That's a great story. What other technologies do you see coming into the market over maybe the next 5 or 10 years? We hear a lot about perovskites. How do you see that on the horizon?
We have been hearing about perovskites for a while, right? And again, it is for sure the next and upcoming gap change for the better, right? How fast that those, how can we call it, layers or coatings of nano coatings of substances, in some cases organic, in some cases inorganic, will be reliable in the long term is what's still being worked on. So how do you apply a layer, a nano coating of that type on a glass or an encapsulant or something that is then laminated into the solar module so that there's no oxygen reaching it? Because when you laminate a solar module, you basically seal all of the components in between two layers that are not permeable. So basically, when you look at your driver's license, right, it's laminated, but it's inside is in between two sheets of plastic. So there's no oxygen reaching there. So you need that for perovskites. You need that for most solar cells because they are susceptible to humidity and oxygen. They will oxidize. So in the case of the next advancement, which you mentioned, perovskites or thin films like that, what still not entirely controlled is the evolution over time and the ability to keep the properties of capturing the light and transforming it into electricity over 25, 30 years. So the product reliability is still what is being worked on. We heard 5-7 years ago that was 5-7 years out, and still today we're saying it's 5-7 years out. So it might happen earlier. It all depends who does, the first big finding. So there are industrial products. When you look at Oxford PV in particular, right? So Oxford PV, as the name indicates, has a factory in Germany. I'm joking. So Oxford PV has right now an industrial product that is a solar cell with heterojunction base cell with a perovskite layer on it. Production of this type of product is still in its infancy, I would say, in terms of volume, when you relate to the, you know, hundreds of gigawatts that are made and installed worldwide in a yearly basis.
Got it. All right. Well, as we get towards the tail end of the show, I would love to find a little bit about your personal journey. So I'm talking to you up Northern Canada. You're a solar manufacturer. Maybe you can share a little bit of how you ended up in this business. And it's a family business, I understood?
It is. And it has been from the inception back in, you know, early 2010. I'm originally from Argentina. I work for an Argentinian multinational, in the oil and gas services industry, in the manufacturing in different countries in the world, of steel pipe for oil and gas extraction. So what I could say is that I contributed to polluting enough for 20 plus years that, you know, this gave me the opportunity to redeem myself. And that sounds very good, but it's, you know, it's not necessarily true. It is true, but I entered into this because I considered it was a good business. And, you know, among us and reading, you know, it's very easy to win the weekend lottery when you have access to Monday newspaper. So looking in retrospective, it might have been too early, right? So the investment into manufacturing for solar modules back in 2010, the demand was not there. The demand the 2010 to 2015-16 period in North America was scattered, was low, and was not predictable, as it is now, right? The consumption and the market is growing faster than we can keep up with it.
Well, cool. I want to thank you so much for coming on the podcast today, sharing your journey and a bit about your company. Excited to see what happens with your developments here in North America and to read more press releases and more interesting things that you'll be doing. Thank you for sharing with us today.
Thank you for the invitation. It has been a real pleasure.
For our audience, we hope you've enjoyed this content as much as we did making it. Don't forget to subscribe and follow us on YouTube, add comments, ask questions, and we'll see you again next time on the Insider's Guide to Energy. Bye for now.